show up? I said, no. But they did anyway.
We're live?
Yep.
And broadcasting?
Yes.
All right. Good afternoon, everyone. This is Commissioner Brian Colquhoun meeting in the 12th floor of the Capitol today. It's approximately 2:35 on February 14th. It's not too late to get your spouse a Valentine's present, Randy, just so you know. We're meeting for work session on case number PU11-697. And if Randy or Julie have any comments, I'd be happy to hear.
Only similar to the last discussion we had, this is another one of those that I heard about last year, and I'm anxious to learn more about where everything sits. And also want to welcome Mr. Nelson from Mid-Continent here today.
Julie?
I have no comments.
All right, thank you. And Mr. Nelson, right?
Yes.
He's here just in
an observation
capacity, just for anybody who might be listening out there. All right, Alana, if you could can proceed.
Okay.
Pat will be joining us as soon as he gets off his conference call.
This case is a case under the Telecommunications Act of 1996, which was the beginning of the deregulation of local telephone service a long time ago, still being implemented. And it began as an arbitration, and an arbitration in the telecom world, in regulatory world, is very similar to arbitration as you understand it, but there are some differences.
If I could, Alana, it didn't begin as an arbitration, though. They had to go through quite a bit of steps to get to arbitration.
Well, yeah, but this case, it was a petition for arbitration and then a motion to dismiss and then a denial, da-da-da-da. But there's an arbitration decision, and that decision has to be approved by the commission, and when the commission approved the decision, that's what got, quote-unquote, appealed. Okay, mm-hmm. Not an appeal like we just talked about in the other case, which is a standard administrative appeal to district court. This is being reviewed by federal district court under a complaint process, okay? So Missouri Valley considered itself the loser in the arbitration decision that the commission approved and filed the complaint in federal district court, okay? So that would be Missouri Valley against the commission and Mid-Continent. Any substantive questions you have to go to Pat, because I paid almost no attention to this case. However, both parties did kind of move for summary judgment, which would be very similar to what you were, these couple of other cases that we have where there's been these motions made for the court to decide it on the law. Okay, and they're kind of cross motions, and that's what's pending now at federal district court. Mm-hmm. Okay, this is a case where we do have the ability to charge the parties for the out-of-pocket expenses under that valuation fund, and this is a case where I would recommend we retain an outside attorney. I don't know if this case will be appealed. If we, you know, win or lose, somebody might still appeal it.
I would interject that I think it's going to be appealed.
Okay.
This is too significant for both parties to not appeal this.
Okay.
There's unclear law out there in this one as well.
And it's precedent setting as far as the future of that portion of telecom in North Dakota. And
so
I think we should, if
we come out of this today, I think that I'd recommend that we get somebody retained quickly.
Well, I asked Mitch Armstrong if he was interested a few months back when Mark first left. I told him where the case was at, gave him the link to what was on the website, and asked him if he would be interested, since he does have federal litigation experience, which is what you need for this case, among other things. Doesn't have telecom experience, I don't believe, but I have all confidence that would not be a problem for him. And he has run a conflict check. He is interested in doing it. He is willing to do it. I double-checked with him this morning before coming in. And nothing is happening. This is waiting on a decision, again, like the other case. But I think it would be good to retain him, if you're comfortable with him, as quickly as we can, so that if he wants to spend a few hours getting up to speed, when the decision comes, he's not trying to do it all at that point in time, because you don't know what else your calendar will have on it at that point in time. So that's
the arbitration recommendation in act. Is it being used right now? I mean, is what they decided on here?
That's scary. I don't think so.
Stayed?
I don't think so.
It didn't sound like they could get a stay, but I couldn't tell. I mean, just from the arbitration, I haven't. So this is in action right now. Can we? Are these rates and everything else described here being used?
We should have him on a mic if we're going to ask him a question, and then you can identify.
Well, and Lana, if I just need to give me help clarify a little bit, it is kind of a unique scenario where, no, please, yeah, grab a seat, that Mid-Continent is also trying to defend our order. So it is appropriate to have him here, of course. But there's...
Well, it's a public meeting.
Yes.
And if you have a question for somebody in the room at a public meeting, I think there's nothing wrong with it. Both sides should know that we were having this work session.
Absolutely.
Dan Nelson representing Mid-Continent. I'm not an attorney for Mid-Continent. Wouldn't consider myself an expert on all aspects of this situation, but an answer to your question is what was ruled under arbitration in process, yes. Was there a stay? No.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Dan.
And how long has this been at court? Do we know which judge it is, Alana?
I do not know who it's before. It was the complaint was docketed in our case in July.
Yeah.
The briefs, I believe, were docketed in our case were more like October, November.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was... most recently, early January, there were briefs, and then there was a response, and then there was a reply to response. I elected not to file a reply to the response. I had nothing to contribute, and
you talked to us about it.
Yeah, yeah. So that was January, early January, but we didn't file one.
Okay.
Well, and maybe this is where Pat. Correct me if I steer off course here too far. The some of the background was the previous commission before I got here. Was involved in some cases that basically upheld Missouri Valley's rural exemption. So that's the commission had a good understanding of what goes on up there. That's where they'd fallen before. In this particular case, when I first looked at it, I thought, well, this will probably be a little bit easier because the rural exemption's just been upheld. They're asking for an interconnect. The way I ended up voting was different than where I thought I was when I first started this. And one of the key things for me was that... in May 26 of 2011, the FCC did a declaratory ruling which clarified, the opinion clarified that the rural exemption does not exempt rural LECs from requirements of a 251B, including 251B number portability obligations and a whole bunch of things. But to me, that particular FCC declaratory ruling was very big in how I ended up with my decision. So the way I understand this appeal process is that us in Mid-Continent would agree with what we did here, but Missouri Valley is trying to say that doesn't apply to them. Is that overly simplified?
Or doesn't mean exactly what you think it means.
So, Pat, I mean, what else did you fill in around that?
Can you, if you could fill in, I think what Brian's alluding to and what my question comes to, it's the same, the difference between the 251A, B, and C and how they... all mean different things, and Missouri Valley thinks C is the most whatever. They should have asked for A or B or C. I have read it all, but I can't remember
way it is. Let me know if I'm getting off, sidetracked off, and not answering your question. But the when we had the hearing, Missouri Valley... was saying that Mid-Continent's asking for the same. They're asking for the same thing they asked before when they came to the commission, however many years before that. They were saying that this interconnection that they want is the same kind of thing. And so the commission's already made that decision and doesn't have to make a decision here. And Mid-Continent was saying, no, that was under 251C. And 251C is where you find the company's rural exemption where you find the language for rural exemption for the rural companies. Where if you have a rural exemption, if a company wants to interconnect with that company, you have to have make a bona fide request, and then the company with the rural exemption would come to the commission, I believe, and the commission has to determine that the company can keep its rural exemption or determine if it should be taken away, canceled. If the rural exemption is canceled, then the local company has to interconnect. But in this case, Midcontinent came and said, we are not asking for interconnection under 251C. We're asking for it under 251A. Or, yeah, I think it was 251A or B, but I think it was A.
A different one.
A different one, yes. Okay,
A and B, thanks. I think.
And so the commission, and they brought this FCC case to the commission's, explained that case to the commission.
Right.
And
exactly.
The commission made its decision based on their testimony and their evidence.
Because, yeah, I think if that case, May of 2011, was not there, I would have voted a different way. That to me was like the big factor.
The FCC decision.
Right.
Yeah. That was
which further
game.
Clarified yeah. some of the rulings of what Ilana said, that the Telecom Act is still being interpreted.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think this is ripe for appeal, because this is a jurisdiction that did this, and we're applying it here for the first time in North Dakota.
And I don't know if that FCC decision was challenged and is on appeal somewhere or not. Not stayed necessarily, but is it?
I believe they, Midcontinent saw it as it was in. It was law. It was final.
Okay.
The FCC's, you know, it was done.
I don't recall it being under appeal because that was a question that we asked, and I think the answer was that it has not been appealed. But that could have changed since the last five months that we talked about it.
But that's what the court will be sorting out.
And then one of the arguments one of the questions was whether. I guess whether Missouri Valley had appealed the FCC's decision. And
yeah, that was exactly
there was
right.
some discussion about that.
Yeah, we asked that. Well, if you guys were so concerned about it, why didn't you appeal it then? You know, I don't know whether they didn't know. But we did not remove the rural exemption.
We did not act on a rural exemption
right.
in this.
So it is kind of an interesting scenario where I think telecom is continuing to be deregulated. They have the rural exemption, but Midcontinent gets interconnection with certain things they have to meet as laid out in arbitration. But really, it does kind of weaken the rural exemption because they're getting interconnection different ways. So, but that's the way FCC is going.
What's required, or what are the criteria for rural exemption? Are those changing in that area with all the growth in Williston?
One would think so.
The facts are changing. The underlying facts are changing. But the two tests, isn't it economic hardship and technical inability?
I think that
there's
is some correct.
Very, I mean, I have a very simple view, but I think there's two prongs, and I think one's a technical, can't be done
thing.
Can
you interconnect or not?
Yeah, technical. And one is economic hardship or black, I don't know what the right term is.
Kind of like public interest.
Yeah. Like,
they get their rural exemption because of what? Like, Williston gets a rural exemption because
it was either
criteria?
Because it was technically too impossible or hard to interconnect, or because it would be too much of an economic hardship or burden on them to require the interconnection.
Okay.
I mean, those are the two tests that I remember from 96. Okay, but I think they're the same two tests on rural exemption. But that's why the underlying facts could change every year.
Right.
I mean,
they do change every year.
I mean, technology advances and
because we asked some questions about that during the hearing about the number of customers, and Missouri Valley's customer base has been growing, and it hadn't grown for decades. I shouldn't say decades, I think it's an exaggeration, but it's growing now.
Probably.
So
maybe a decade and a half.
But it really, similar to our previous discussion, this came down to this very narrow viewpoint I had of this 2011 decision, applied it over to North Dakota, and that's where I landed at. In that one, Commissioner Clark, myself, and Kramer were all involved in the hearings. And Tony never got around to voting on it because he'd already left to go to the FERC before the vote came. So it was actually just Kevin and I that voted on it. But I know that in many work sessions with Tony, if he would have been here for the vote, it would have been a 3-0 vote. Mm-hmm. So, and he was he was very good at telecom. Mm-hmm. So that was a very thorough hearing that we had. And of course, Pat didn't want it to.
Well, I wasn't there. Patrick. Patrick is your telecom go-to person.
So I can understand the whole long process, under 251C. Is it fair to say that that says if you have a rural exemption, you don't have to give an interconnection agreement? If someone asks for an interconnection agreement, you then go to the PSC to get your rural exemption reaffirmed, and if it's reaffirmed, then you deny it. Right. If it's not reaffirmed, then you have to do all the things and provide the interconnection, right? And so that process would have not required them to do an interconnection, but the language that was found in A and B, or one or the other, or both, kind of provides all the things for an interconnection agreement, and they meet that standard, and thus the interconnection agreement was required.
And that was reaffirmed by the 2011 decision.
Right. The 2011 decision said all these things, which is basically the definition of an interconnection agreement, so they get it, right?
There's a difference. You know, there was a lot of talk about differences between interconnection agreement under 251A and 251C. But when it came down to the bottom line is that under 251A, the rural exemption didn't apply, and the commission determined that after seeing the FCC order and hearing the evidence at the hearing on the FCC's order, determined that, yes, what Mid-Continent is looking for is available under 251A.
And does this agreement differ substantially from what would have been granted if under C they had lost their rural exemption? And would that agreement have differed from this?
Yes, there was some testimony.
Green light.
There was testimony on the differences between 251A interconnection and 251C interconnection. One of the things that I remember about being a difference is that under 251C, Mid-Continent can choose where they want to interconnect. Under 251A, Mid-Continent doesn't have an option. The company determines where the interconnection is.
The point of interconnection was a big thing.
Because they had a point. They were connecting somehow, even with our order, right? I mean, there was some connection agreement. It just was different than what Mid-Continent wanted.
Missouri Valley argued that Mid-Continent already had an interconnection.
Yeah.
Indirect.
An indirect one, okay.
Right.
So what's that? What is an indirect interconnection versus what they want?
Well, an indirect would be where you are some distance away and there's some other, this is my impression. Anyway, I'm not sure I'm going to get this right, but you are some distance away, there's some other facility between you and the local company, but you're still connected because there are enough arrangements that have been made to get you to connect to the local network.
So you can still operate.
You're able to terminate and originate calls from that local exchange that you want interconnection with.
Mm-hmm.
And the negative to that is, I suppose, you have to pay some access.
There could be, yes.
Mm-hmm. Or you might pay that intermediary something. Whatever is the indirect.
Whatever the indirect things are. I remember one of the things that Mid-Continent said was that if you are trying to get connected in the local exchange, it's not an indirect connection. It's not called indirect connection, right? Because you're right there in the exchange. And they argued that even though that's not, even though, you know, they want a direct connection, and even though they already had indirect connection, maybe, they wanted this local exchange connection, and it's a direct connection, and they argued they could get that under 251A.
It seemed to me there was something significant about the FCC ruling saying that you had the duty to interconnect and exchange traffic. So the exchanging was something that Mid-Continent wanted and Missouri Valley didn't want to provide, or wasn't, I don't think, providing under their...
Yeah, there was...
Under the arrangement with...
there was some, I think in the act it's silent about transporting. There's this interconnection, but it's silent, doesn't mention the word transporting the telecommunications.
So it should be implied, but...
But it's implied, yeah.
Mm. Or to some people it isn't.
Yeah. It was like, it's crazy that you can interconnect and not be able to transport.
Move anything, yeah.
So it's... And it goes without saying.
But that's why having an attorney get him or her up to speed on this quickly is important, depending on how this goes, because I don't think it goes away for a while.
Or if there's another or a related one, then you've got somebody ready to go.
Oh.
Another company, another, yeah. You know, another request. So if the commission, I mean, I can take direction from the commission on that and then just prepare it for the next meeting. Because Mitch would need an appointment by the Attorney General. I'll just fill in. Any time an outside attorney represents the state, that person needs an appointment as a special assistant attorney general through the Attorney General's office. And we got a generic one for citing cases. So to help us, for Mitch, to help on citing cases so that we don't have to go ask for an appointment for every citing case, and then I can just, like we did Highland the other day, I can just line it up and put it on the agenda. But any new case would need an appointment as a special assistant for that case. The Attorney General goes case by case.
And is that a flat monthly retainer, or is it by the hour?
It's by the hour. And his rates...
We're not paying him unless he's working on
right.
This case.
His rates have gone up for new cases from what we've paid in the past. But he's still charging a bargain rate, basically.
And this doesn't come out of our budget.
Right.
He gets billed to the companies. And I think I've mentioned to both companies' attorneys that I was recommending we do this, and yeah. They would start getting bills when their salaries billed.
How is it apportioned between the companies?
I would apportion it half and half, but that is always a question. When we used to have, like, all the co-ops versus AT&T or something, then we'd have to figure out what's fair. Some have been based on revenues. But in this, it's a A versus B. I mean, they're both phone companies, A versus B. To me, it's half and half. I don't know.
Regardless who wins?
Oh, yeah. I think so. But that's an idea, I don't know, we could pursue someday. Well, winner, loser pays all kind of thing? Or I don't know.
Besides that we can bill... Other than that, what's the difference between this and a previous discussion we had about what our role is in the appeal process? If we were talking about pipeline safety and saving people's lives, I understand we have a mission to go out and protect safety. But this is, I'm kind of looking at this as Midco's battle against
yes.
Missouri Valley. Why do we want to spend a lot of money helping Midco other than that we found on their side?
Right. No, I agree.
Found on the side of the people.
Yeah. Well, and there
Midco's yeah. position on this.
Yes, one. You know, competition and all that. I agree with the concept that you've brought up twice now. I really honestly do, and I have been one of the people in the agency for many years that says when it's A versus B, we're like a judge. Judge isn't going to go help you, you know, defend your divorce on appeal. The judge just makes the decision, and the two parties pursue it the rest of the way. And so I basically do have that philosophy. I was just assuming we would want somebody perhaps to kind of finish this case. And
no, let's go. This is a larger legal disc. We have one attorney, yeah. And we need to get as much off your plate as we can. And this is one that is very detailed and... There will be other things like, when depending on how this comes out, there will be other, Mid-Continent will go other places. If the other people win, it will go back. And this is the beginning of a lot of changes, I think.
So well, to Randy's point, I think, you know, maybe direction to Mitch. It would be good to have him on board and up to speed so he can advise us when things yep. are, when this wraps up as to, you know, here are the options for next steps and maybe one of them is you know.
Yeah.
Nothing. But I think it'd be helpful to have some advice from an attorney who has studied it and understands all the issues involved. And then we can decide from there how much more we would invest. Because I agree with you. I mean, I don't know that you can say that this is which side is the best, the winner for the public down there. It's, you know, there's pros and cons.
The most pro in this case on continuing to have a presence, even if it's a minor presence, is the fact that if it goes to the Supreme Court, then your name is on there. I mean, the PSC's name is on there, Supreme Court of the United States. I mean, you know, that's kind of cool. And, you know, that's kind of thing that NARA people notice. But I'm sounding facetious. I don't really mean to be. It does have a possibility of doing that, but I agree with the basic philosophy that I think in these A versus B cases, the commission does not really have a dog in the race, unless the decision perhaps challenges like something procedural that we did wrong and we think we have to defend.
Well, and that's what I don't quite see it that cut and dried, because we are defending our decision.
We are defending our decision.
To sit and just kind of let it play out, I'm not there. Okay, we made a decision based on a set of facts, and we need to make sure that everything is properly represented going forward. And so having an attorney dedicated to that, he'll reassure that everything that we based our decision on isn't all the follow-on paperwork where Alana spread 50 different ways. And so that's where I think having someone in, and we are defending our order. I agree with you that we don't want to go too far past that point, but it's our order that we're defending.
Right. And we have already at some point. So you can decide, I think, how much more to invest. But I think you're well served to have somebody become familiar with it and be ready to act or advise, especially given the session.
I like the idea of us having somebody gain this expertise, be prepared to advise us as this is proceeding, and in future cases, you know, remind us how this case might affect the next one and that sort of thing. Whether it's this or any other one, when these things are being appealed, I just worry that then because we're going to split the bill between the two sides, our attorney becomes the surrogate for
the winner
side of the case that we're in agreement with, and thus doing the heavy lifting.
Yeah.
And then dividing the bill when the side that we're in agreement apparently has already proved their ability to make their case very well. That's why the commission chose that side in the first place.
I don't get the sense that
careful not to let that happen.
When our attorneys in previous cases have gone to the state Supreme Court, our attorneys, we do our own filings. We do everything on our own. We may look what they're doing and talk to them, but it's all our filings. So we don't file jointly with Company X. Their briefs may look similar, but it's all our product.
I'm not going to – you share information. I mean, everybody does that, even if you're, like, not on this case, but you had something similar, you share. That's the networking of the attorneys. But a good example would be CapEx, which is now done, basically, the appeal of CapEx, where we were very careful. Mitch represented us because he had done the citing case on the appeal. So, yes, we found for one side of that appeal, not for the other. But we were careful. Like, there were whole issues that say the company litigated, like the stay of the order.
Yeah, that was...
That we didn't... Like, he made, like, a couple, three basic legal points, and that was it. He did not invest any time or effort really trying to, like, defend or reject the stay.
But that was a decision
point. Because it's
not our issue. Yeah. You just said we don't...
We talked about it.
We'll let the judge decide. We're not going to get in the middle of, do they stop building or not? That's not for us. That's past that point.
So I think you raise a good point to keep that staff has to keep it in mind, discuss it with Mitch, and then bring those kinds of issues to you to see, do you want to pursue this or that or not? But I think with Mitch, I mean, we've had good experience where he is also very careful and will bring it to our attention, even if we don't think of it, to ask that question.
Okay. Anything else?
Since we're a little ahead of schedule, this doesn't have any a lot of bearing on this case. It's just a point of curiosity. Whether it's under C or A or B or any combination, in an interexchange agreement, does the incumbent, as I read this, it sounds to me like they even have the obligation of including in directories the competitors' numbers? I always thought that that was one advantage that the incumbent always had.
I don't know, but it's just so funny because this act was written to get the big, bad, ugly incumbents to just do everything to help the competitor. I mean, it was. It just was. Not the co-ops, because they were, like, not even in the picture. But, yeah, if you could make Quest or Verizon or, you know,
share it all.
Southern Bell, as much as you could get out of them for the competitor, you tried to.
Competition.
Yeah, and it had to be fair and equal.
In order to bring competition, you had to make a way for competitors to connect with the rest of the people in the world. That are, you know, and some of those are served by the incumbents, including the rural companies.
So would the, is that only when the number's ported? Or like if I asked either Quest or a local phone co-op to put my cellular phone number from Verizon in the phone book, do they have to print that and help me out?
No. Well, no, because that's cellular.
Cellular don't.
But maybe if you could were buying your, well, they do, but it's not. It's slightly
like,
different.
Yeah, it's more like access.
It's for carrying. It's so you can call the landline, and a landline can call your cell. There was no interconnection agreement; it would not work. It's not so much to make them an equal competitor, like two landline competitors, but all of those little tiny things that give that big bad bell company the edge were, in theory, supposed to be going away under the Telephone Act.
But that's what we talked about, the NARU committees. You being on the telecom committee would be huge because when the FCC wants testimony about stuff like this, they'll go to the NARU committee on telecom. And they'll have whoever the chair of that committee is will come up and say his or her piece. So these type of discussions, take those into the NARUC circle and develop NARUC positions on it. I mean, it's that's what, I don't know, I wasn't sold in the beginning of NARUC just because I just thought it seemed like, I don't know, it didn't seem like there was a real value. But once you get into it a little bit, you see that when Congress has questions, they'll talk to their individual commissioners a little bit, like Cramer would call us or two senators. But usually they're going to go to these expert committees around the country and get some of their ideas. So the more we can, yeah, absolutely. So if you chair the telecom committee, you can tell the FCC chair that.
But then you'll have all those differences of rural and urban and everything on your committee.
You'd have to actually go places.
Yeah, then you'd have to fly. Although somebody did say that at the neighbor meeting that there are commissioners who drive everywhere. So
are
maybe
there?
Turn
well, I don't like that.
A couple.
I don't like the time running around. That's
why flying is so beautiful.
All right. Anything else for the good of the commission?
No.
All right. With that, we'll close the work session on PU 11-697. And turn off the mics.